on Friday, this past Friday, the 17th of July, 2021, a vehicle caught fire at my auto repair shop, Lombardi Auto Body and Repair. Now, thankfully, I'm supposed to turn myself up. No one was hurt. Okay? That's the good news. The city of Washington Fire Department got it under control like lickety split and pretty much saved my business. And, so far, it only looks like we lost two vehicles, but there's major damage to our paint building, and it's going to take a while to sort of sort everything out with insurance, etc. But the good news is, because it contained so quickly, we still have total use of the rest of the shop, so we are able to remain open for business. So in honor of Prometheus's gift to mankind, we will be talking about the hottest rock and metal songs about fire! Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Moms and dads, boys and girls, children of all ages, grandmas and grandpas, children of all ages, grandmas and grandpas. I'm sorry. So the record got stuck. Welcome to the circus, the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My name is Ludini. I am your ringmaster for this madness that happens every Tuesday on Rock Rage Radio and a bunch of other places out there. Pretty much just here in my house, but it doesn't happen on Rock Ridge Radio till Sunday. If you're confused by that, just stick around. It's going to just get worse. anyways, it's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. We come each week and we pick a topic related to rock, metal, hard rock, punk, whatever, and we just give you some great content and information all about whatever that topic is. Sometimes it's an album. Sometimes we do some kind of top 10 list. Sometimes it's a where are they now. We do a lot of different types of things. Today, we are just kind of doing a garden variety songs about fire because of the recent current events in my life.
Lovely.
So that's just the sort of sense of humor that I have. The Ludini Rock and Roll Circus can be found by going to LudiniRockandRollCircus.com. Merch page, bios, the whole thing is right there, LudiniRockandRollCircus.com. If you would like to become part of our community, you want to go to LuLombardiMusic.com, and you get some free downloads, you get access to our community, you get on the list, and there's all kind of goodies and perks for doing that. Shout out to our sponsors, Rock Rage Radio, RockRageRadio.com. Download the app, and you can listen to great guitar-driven rock 24/7 wherever you want. It's Sirius is cheap, but this is even cheaper. It's freaking free. So check it out at rockrageradio.com. Also, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Wolf's Customs, wolfscustoms.online. They do amazing painting, repainting, artwork, etc. on your musical instrument. So, you know, now that things are in full swing again, you guys are out there gigging and stuff like that, you want to have your guitar, bass, drum set, whatever, just looking like really stand out. People love that. People love the visual aspect of the show. And who knows, it might inspire you to play something really cool if your guitar looks really cool. So get a hold of the Chris Thunderwolf Dodson at wolfscustoms.online. We do have the crew today. We've got Pittsburgh Kevin all the way from
Pittsburgh.
Des Moines. I just flew in and boy, my arm's tired. Yes.
Whoa, thanks for
a million of them.
Oh, try the veal.
A million of them.
And of course, the lovely and talented, the person who actually kind of brings a little class to the show is Lily V6.
Oh, what's up? I'm always confused when you say talented. I really don't know what you mean by that.
You're talented.
I'm here, so there's that.
Yes, talented. Just think of words that begin with T.
Huh?
And on that happy note... Mm-hmm. There was a fire thing, right? But I did something really cool. My Nirvana tribute band, which has just been renamed Lithium, played at the Tally Ho in Leesburg, Virginia on Saturday night. It was an awesome show, very well attended, especially since it was the first time that they were back to full capacity, the first show that they had full capacity. Leesburg is this quaint little colonial kind of looking town with little bars and stuff. A lot of fun. And we had a blast. It was great to get. We hadn't played out in a year and a half. And a shout out to my brother Super Monkey, because he and I hadn't had a sit down and drink and really just catch up on everything. And we did a lot of that over the weekend too. And it was a lot of super, super fun. And so I was really happy to be a part of that. And so there's going to be new Lithium shows coming up soon. And we will let you guys know all about that. Lily did something really cool
yesterday
and took some great photos too as well. No, not that. Pittsburgh Kevin, get your head out of the gutter.
Sorry guys.
I went to Jurgles yesterday in the Pittsburgh area and saw Lita Ford, which was freaking awesome. She sounds great. She looks great. She still kicks ass for being 62, 63-ish years old. It was opened by the local bands Neutral Loss and the, I believe it's Rod Wilkins, LOC band. I might be wrong on how you say that. Sorry, but you guys were there too.
Nice.
Awesome.
Lou,
awesome.
You said you were a tally-ho. That would explain some things. See, I went to Tally Whackers, and the band I saw it wasn't Lithium, so I got to pay attention.
You needed Lithium after you saw that.
I did, yeah.
Anyway, so we're going to be talking.
Are we?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, maybe we'll just make you guys wait. No, I'm just kidding. No. We got comments last week that people like the banter, so
we're gonna do that.
But so we'll be doing it as we feel it. So
ha ha, punished.
Yeah. Careful what you wish for.
Yeah, we don't want to like try to force it. I'm sitting here because I got like when I saw that I'm like, oh crap, I have to think of banter now. You know how your mind goes, you know. So you're not just feeling relaxed and just bantering like we were.
I really don't feel like you could do fake banter though, Lou. Yeah, I don't think that's really a thing.
I can't. So let's get into it then for a little bit, and we'll banter in between and keep you guys entertained. Plus, as always, we will do This Day in Music later on. And I do want to make a mention that a seminal band for me growing up, I had pretty eclectic taste. You know, I loved Rush, but I also loved U2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I loved The Alarm and I loved Kansas. Mm-hmm. And Robbie Steinhardt, who sort of co-fronted that band, he played violin and he sang Let Me Tell You One Thing, and he sang kind of like echo things with Steve Walsh, because they did some call and response stuff in some songs. And he passed away. It was unfortunate. He was ill, and he was in the hospital, and I ended up getting sepsis, and it was really unfortunate. It's only 71 years old. Only 71 years
old.
Yeah,
well, you know.
But, him and Charlie Daniels, right? They were the fiddle players in rock.
Yep. And now they're both gone.
Yeah, so, Wow, this podcast is going downhill really fast.
We just need to get that stuff out of the way.
Yeah, okay. All right. So anyways, I just want to shout out to Robbie Steinhardt. Kansas was just the band I absolutely loved, and I was just sort of sad to hear that. But they left us some great music, so go listen to some of it. So let's go ahead and start talking about these songs about fire!
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
There's... I hate you guys. There are so many songs with the word fire in it, in the title, or about fire. I thought it was amazing how many I found. So that was awesome. So
we had kicked around different ideas for this week. One was songs to crash your car to.
I forgot about that. Yes.
And I think
Damn
that
it.
Will be fun. We will have to do that in the future. And Keith sent me an idea. I don't have it in front of me at the moment as well. But yeah.
Yeah.
So why don't we just go ahead, you know, and that would be maybe great if you could just maybe start the show. Maybe an idea.
I'm gonna burn this place down. I'm gonna burn. Look at my sleep.
Do you want me to? You want me to talk there, Ringmaster? Or you
yes, I want you to start, babe. Okay. I want you to bring us in. Bring us
so
in.
So we're gonna talk about a song that I heard live last night, "Playing with Fire" by Lita Ford.
Yeah.
It's one that I love. It's from the album Dangerous Curves from 1991, which I didn't realize was from the 1990s, but that's okay. this one isn't about a literal fire, but about the fire between two young people in love or lust or whatever you want to call it. She sings about how she takes what she wants. Whether she should or not, whether it's forbidden or not, again, whatever. She's taking the risk and playing with fire. I can relate to the song because I have done the same thing many times in the past and gotten burned, but it's okay. If anyone gets hurt in that situation and you don't care, then you're just playing with fire. So, yay. But it was a great song, and she sounded great last night.
Wow.
Playing it and singing it.
Ah, Lily.
You don't like that song? It's not on there. I already looked.
Yeah, the one that I wanted to talk about is not on here either, unfortunately.
Sadness.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Into the Fire, not the Deep Purple song, but the Dawkins song.
Yeah, legit. Yeah.
You know, so unfortunately, I don't have it's a great, great Dawkins track.
Is it? Yes, decent hit for them also.
Yeah,
yeah.
So,
thanks, internet.
Why don't you give us? Why don't you? I'm getting something together here, Pittsburgh Kevin. Why don't you?
Right. You go, Kevin.
We spoke about this band briefly earlier. I'm going to go with Kansas. Fight Fire with Fire.
It's a good one.
Thank you. Let me do my research. No. So it's off their album Drastic Measures from 1983, and this particular single hits 58 on the charts. So that's pretty good.
Wow.
It was their 12th Kansas single to hit the charts. And again, not a whole lot of information. I just remember hearing it. I remember getting Drastic Measures and just being blown away. And Fight Fire with Fire was one of my favorite songs.
I think that's the song that opens the album.
You see, kids, back in the day,
it's not on here either called albums. To even read anything about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's a little. These are, you know, both these songs were kind of obscure. Let me get into one though.
Yes.
That is, I think we all
know. No more mainstream.
Yeah, a little bit more mainstream. This song was my. Now, I turned the radio on, like in 1980. Okay, so when I say that this song was my introduction to Blue Oyster Cult, don't like get all over my ass because this song was a big radio track for them, album radio, a rock radio track for them, "Burning for You," written by Buck Dharma.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and
I love that name.
Richard Meltzer, who was a like a rock journalist who often contributed lyrics to Blue Oyster Cult. Did not know that. Mm. Dharma was going to release this on his solo album Flat Out, but was later convinced to include it on Fire of Unknown Origin, which is also one of my favorite album covers. We might do a part two favorite album covers. We did that before. but he said, "Burning for You" is a Richard Meltzer lyric that probably has the most sincere sentiment from my view. I wrote the music to that because I thought I could, do a good job. And I guess I did. when Meltzer wrote the lyrics, he titled the song "Burn Out the Night," which is a reference to an evening of rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Blue Oyster Cult had a band house where the band members and associates, including their manager, Sandy Poilman.
Oh, Sandy.
Sandy Poilman.
Sure.
God.
I think we should all go for cocktails at Trader Vic's afterwards.
Oh, could we?
Oh, boy.
He'd bring song ideas and lyrics. Joe Bouchard was the bass player at the time, told Metal Magazine Chips and Bear, that's Metal Magazine.
Wow.
That he and Buck Dharma came across Meltzer's lyrics at the same time. Each wrote their own song around it. Dharma's version with title change to Burning For You was the one that got recorded. Along with Black Sabbath, Blue Oyster Cult was one of the first heavy metal bands, I guess maybe. They issued their first album in 1972 and grew a modest following before scoring a hit with "Don't Fear the Reaper," also written by Buck Dharma, from their 76 album "Agents of Fortune," which hit number 12 and became embedded on rock playlists, and hence the joke, more cowbell. So if you don't know this song and you're not sure who Blue Oyster Cult is, it's the More Cowbell Band.
Yeah.
Wow.
There you go.
That's sad that you have to say that.
Mm. Yeah. But the first 8 lines of the song contain the word home.
Okay.
Home Home in the valley, home in the city. Home isn't pretty. Ain't no home for me. Home in the darkness, home on the highway. Home isn't my way. Home will never be.
Hmm.
Verses build into fiery chorus where Dharma is living for giving the devil his due. There's nothing more, much more rock and roll than that.
No.
You can tell the song was written in part by a rock writer from the line Time to Play B-Sides,
yes.
Which back in the days of 45 RPM vinyl records were the tracks that came on the flip sides of the hits. So that's a thing that like nobody... Like you may not, you hear that, oh, it's like a B-side, and you may not get where that even comes from. These were often junk, but sometimes they were gems. Music writers loved looking for these. BOC was one of the few American rock bands that was making videos when MTV launched in 81. The single was released in July that year when MTV went out on the air on August 1st. They were happy to put it in rotation since they wanted to push a rock format but had little to choose from. Thanks to exposure on the network, the song rose up the charts, reaching 40 in October. BOC, who didn't even appear on their first four album covers, were not destined to be video stars. The videos made for their 83 follow-up album, Revolution by Night, Shooting Shark, and Take Me Away were ignored by the network, which had become enamored with the more visually intriguing bands like Duran Duran Culture Club.
That's because before videos, you didn't have to be pretty.
Right. I mean, you know, and we mentioned Kansas earlier, and have you ever seen any Kansas videos?
Wow.
Yeah, it's like, whoa. Yeah, no. Like, that's why they didn't really kind of keep going, I think, the way they could have in the 80s, because they just were not visually...
No, they look like they just came out of the fields.
Yeah.
Of Iowa.
Yeah, like, they're awkward looking.
Yeah,
they're
just when they came out, man, they could play.
Yeah, but they can't play. A great band. In any case, I love B.O.C., and I freaking love this song, and it was about the time I was really getting into music, and the song was on the rock station here in Pittsburgh, WDVE, was up in pretty heavy rotation, and I just found the lyrics so kind of... that captured my imagination. Like, what is this guy talking about? And it just really kind of like took me on a journey. And if you sit and listen to the song and you stare at that crazy album cover.
There it is.
Yeah. And boom goes the dynamite. So that's the story of Burning For You, a song about, you know, fire, fire, fire. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm going to go next.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Firehouse by Kiss.
Oh.
Released in 74 on the debut album, the track was written by the band's rhythm guitarist and vocalist, Paul Stanley. This was part of the first five-song demo Kiss recorded at Electric Lady Studios, founded by Jimi Hendrix.
Little ladies.
With Eddie Kramer producing. During live performances, bassist Gene Simmons has breathed fire with red lights flashing and sirens sounding. Firehouse has remained a concert staple and is regarded as one of the band's classic songs. With its fan favorite status, the song is one of the most played songs in the Kiss catalog, having been played more than 1,400 times as of June 2014. So now we're in 2021, so who knows. Paul Stanley wrote the song while he attended the High School of Music and Art in New York City. He said he was inspired by British rock group, the British rock group's The Move's song Fire Brigade. The two tracks are similar in their choruses, Get the Fire Brigade and Get the Firehouse. Background sound effects are the similar too. Firehouse was one of the first numbers that Kiss performed during the band's earliest national TV appearances. And it's associated with Simmons' fire breathing, like I said. One of many incidents occurred on December 31st, 1973, at the Brooklyn Academy of Music in New York City when the band was opening for Blue Oyster Cult. Mm. Simmons' hair caught fire for the first of many times.
I'm sure. Have you ever seen how he does it?
Well, yes, many times.
Yeah, it's ripe for that. I mean, like, it was like, that was going to happen.
In November 1972, Kiss, the then performing as Stanley Simmons Chris Trio, played Firehouse along with Strutter and Deuce to Epic Records A&R director Don Ellis. The showcase was intended to secure a record deal for the group. During the performance of Firehouse, the band started ringing a bell, Stanley enacting a firefighting scenario, then retrieved a red pail and threw it at an alarmed Ellis who thought there was a real fire taking place. As Ellis was leaving, Peter Criss's drunk brother also vomited on his foot. Ellis later said that it was the worst performance he ever heard. But still remains one of the most popular Kiss songs.
Wow. You know, another one you could put on the list by Kiss, you could put Hotter Than Hell.
Heaven's on Fire.
And Heaven's on Fire.
Look at that. The list goes on and on and on. Yeah.
And there it is.
That good. That's a cool pick. I'm gonna pick a really old song. This is one of those like
I don't want to set the world on fire. Oh, is it that one?
No. Oh. This is one of those songs like you hear on like Lost Track weekends or what's there's a station on Sirius that just caters to like oh it's called Deep Tracks. So it's a song you would hear on Deep Tracks. In Pittsburgh, you would hear this occasionally on something called the Electric Lunch.
Michelle
would play. This is a song that Michelle would play. It's a crazy song. It's really this guy. There's a documentary. It's like a 2 or 3 part documentary. You can watch it on YouTube about the history of heavy metal. And there's this whole section, a pretty long section of it, where they talk about something called proto metal and bands that were sort of like kind of doing the metal shtick, but weren't necessarily playing metal music yet. Mm-hmm. And really, there really wasn't that kind of guitar sound to it and stuff, but they were really being kind of like dark and, you know, kind of dramatic and stuff like that. Arthur Brown was one of these people. And the song Fire was released in 1968, performed by the Crazy World of Arthur Brown. It was released as a single and on the band's debut album, also called The Crazy World of Arthur Brown. The single became a transatlantic hit, reaching number one in the UK and Canada and number two in the United States while hitting the top 10 markets across Europe. During live performances and in a black and white promotional TV clip, Brown performed the song wearing a burning helmet. So there's more fire. Wow. The All helmet right. was improvised with a leather skull cap onto which was bolted a metal dish that held lighter fluid or petrol. This is old school. This is how rockers did not know how to do
pyrotechnics.
Not yet. Yeah. Yeah, they were just figuring that out. Could you imagine the club they would go into? And do, oh, my God. Anyways, as the cap was so the cap wasn't insulated.
Oh.
So the heat. And the burning fuel quickly conducted through the fixing bolt on the top of Brown's head, causing him considerable pain.
Boy. Wow.
So he's on stage. He's got like this like little leather cap on, and he's got they rigged up some kind of metal plate on it, and they put lighter fluid and light it on fire. Well, there's like a bolt. So it's like conducting right into heat right into his head probably after like 20 seconds.
Uh-huh. Sounds like some Nikki Sixx shit.
It's like,
nice.
Yeah, but it's the 60s. People were just trying to figure out how to do this stuff. Yep. There are two mixes of Fire, which have been officially released, one in stereo and one in mono. That's how old we're going here. Wow. The mono mix features no brass. Both versions are included on the CD reissue of The Crazy World of Arthur Brown. The B-side single, Rest Cure, was another track from the album. So we talked about B-sides earlier. The song is an example of the psychedelic rock period, though its lack of guitar, and bass distinguished it from many of its contemporaries. The lead instrument in this case was Vincent Crane's Hammond organ, augmented by orchestral a section featuring prominent brass. The singer's opening proclamation, "I am the god of hellfire," became a lasting catchphrase. The song ends with the sound of wind from hell, along with Brown's trademark banshee screams. Credit for the composition of Fire on the original vinyl single was to Arthur Brown and Vincent Crane only. However, Mike Feinsilver and Peter Kerr successfully sued for co-credit and the royalties based on melodic similarities to their song, Baby, You're a Long Way Behind. Things you didn't know.
Wow.
I'm not going to lie. I don't even know what the song is.
You don't know. When we're done, we'll listen to it. You have heard it.
I'll know it.
You'll know. I mean, you probably don't like, you wouldn't know to sing along with it.
Oh, okay.
But you'd be like, yeah. I know that thing.
Yes.
Okay.
But it starts out with that, I am a god of hellfire. And then it gets into
yeah,
this.
Yeah, definitely.
It's crazy. It's really off. It's really off the hook.
He lights his head on fire.
But yeah. So I thought it was an interesting song and an interesting story. So. I wanted to do something a little bit different for you guys, so I hope you enjoyed it.
Speaking of that, what is going on?
I can't get mine to pull up the thing.
We've got Beth watching, and Beth. Chris Thunderwolf and Raven are there. Robert King, he's from Babylon Rising.
Robert King, nice. We love you!
My mom, Tracy Samson's watching.
Hello, mom.
Hello, mommy.
Heath Emery.
Keith!
Not Keith, Heath.
Heath.
Oh.
Diana Swens, Robert Diana. Pearson, wow. Watching from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Woo!
Wayne. And that's what we have.
Nice. Ludini Rock and Roll Circus salutes your town of Fort Wayne.
Salute! Wow.
We're old. Do you even know what that's from?
No. Yeah,
Lily. She, I was asking her.
No, I've never seen like, that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I jumped right in. It was like,
that's okay.
She got excited.
It was an interrogative.
Oh, you got another one over there.
I do.
So we're going to turn it over to Pittsburgh Kevin.
That's me, everybody. So this song is not necessarily about fire, but the word fire is very prominent toward the end of it. This is AC/DC. For those about to rock, we salute you. And, of course, you know, at the end, you've got the cannons and you've got, you know, he's saying, fire! Right.
I do so, like that song.
The title of this song the inspiration is from the whole thing with the Romans and Caesar and everything. And Hail Caesar, for those who are about to die, salute you. And, of course, they, you know, changed it to rock because they're lyricologists, man. But anyway, the really cool thing was the whole canon thing at the end was inspired by something that really had nothing to do with this song. The album and the single were released in 1981, and they were cutting the first recordings of the song the same day as Princess Diana and Charles were getting married. And Angus recalled someone had the wedding on in the next room.
Oh, my God. Somebody take that away from him.
Oh, Lord. Boys in their toys. But he said somebody had the wedding on, and there were cannons going off.
Oh.
And they're like, that sounds pretty good. And that's why they added the cannons at the end of that song, is because of Charles and Diana's wedding.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's very
interesting. I didn't even know.
Did not know that. That's wild, wacky stuff, Ed.
Oh, my God. Carson, stop.
Yes, yes, Ed over there is...
Ho! Right you are, Lou.
So, what do you got?
I have Quest for Fire by Iron Maiden.
What?
The song is from the fourth studio album, Peace of Mind, released in 1983. It was the first album to feature drummer Nico McBrain, who had... recently left the band Trust and has been Iron Maiden's drummer ever since. This is based on the 1981 French film of the same name directed by Jean-Jacques Annaud.
Oh.
It is about cavemen looking for fire and contains little dialogue. As such, it is something of an art film and not very popular. Vocalist Bruce Dickinson found the lyrics so funny, he kept fluffing up the vocal takes through laughing so much. The song's writer, Steve Harris, didn't find that so amusing. This is generally acknowledged as one of Maiden's worst songs. I disagree. Maiden doesn't have a bad song. Like the film, few people like it, but I like it because Iron Maiden, and I don't think it's a bad song, and I think it's deserves to be on the list. So there we go.
So there.
And what I says goes.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to talk about a song because I saw... the album tour that this song came from, I saw this tour.
OMG.
And it was the very first concert at what became known as Starlight Amphitheater.
Ooh. Wow.
Nice. It's still Starlight, too.
That's cool. It's come back to Starlight, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. So, and this song is the album Stormfront by Billy Joel. The song is We Didn't Start the Fire. And, you know, he didn't start the fire. That's all I really want to say about it.
It wasn't him.
Just wasn't him.
I mean, he just kept saying it. Kind of makes me feel like he's guilty, but go on.
He says I read an interview with him talking about, or saw an interview with him talking about this, and he kind of conceived the song at first as a kind of a rap, but he's like, I'm not a, and he, so
I
he,
could
he,
see that.
He joked, in the interview, he sort of joked the lyrics, like he kind of, you know, kind of goofed on them as a rap thing, and, but he's like, yeah, he said that really wasn't going to work. So
I could see that, though.
So it kind of was, you know, originally conceived that way, but then it morphed into something else. We Didn't Start the Fire surprised Billy Joel when it became a number one hit in 1990. The list song ticked off the names of the major newsmakers between 1949, when Joel was born, and 1989. So pretty clever. The song's about my life, Joel told Rolling Stone. Most of my mail I get about that song comes from teachers who have said that this is the greatest teaching tool to come down the pikes in Sesame Street, which means a lot to me. I once wanted to be a history teacher, but I wish people could understand that I did not write that song to be a hit. I wrote that one for me. And nobody liked it at first. One person in the studio said it gave them a headache. Sometimes I listen to records and I think, if it wasn't my record, maybe I could have been sick of that thing too. But the song mostly came up off the top of my head. And so it's like,
I'm not a fan of his, but I do like that song.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you've never heard the song, it's exactly what it does. It counts down about 40 years of history in about 3 minutes. And it's a, you know, kind of a cool rock tune of his. It's a more, you know, kind of intense track. And I remember when the song came out, I actually went, there was no internet, but I did go to the encyclopedia and did look up some of the things.
Oh, like the things
some of the things. And I did not know what thalidomide was. Mm. And he talks about the children of thalidomide. And I was like, what the hell is he talking about? Like, you know, and, so it's very interesting. It was a fertility medication, right?
It was an anti-nausea medication given to mothers.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't fertility. It was anti-nausea. No, it was anti-nausea. And, and kids, it would cause severe birth defects, like crazy stuff.
Yes.
You know, people born with flippers and things.
Mm-hmm. So it made you learn.
Yeah.
It made me learn thing. I learned my word on that song.
He's smart.
I had to practice my word every day, and I'll do the village old waste on fire. Yep.
You tell him, Lou.
Yep. How I do.
Yeah.
You know what, Kevin?
There's something wrong with
us. I think that you should
quack. I should quack. I don't even know how you got that one.
That's a Facebook sound.
I didn't know Facebook made sounds.
All right, Kevin.
Oh, Lord,
but that's cool.
All right, so we're going to go. Who is it? Who's there?
Who dare?
Is that Lou? Lou, is that you knocking on my door? I'm knocking, but you can't come in. All right. And speaking of shit like that, we're going to go way back. Way back.
I'm ready
way,
to mark it because I think you have
way
what I
back.
Have.
Oh, you probably have more than I do because you're what they call smart. We're going to go all the way back. Lou. Hey, Lou, we're going to go all the way back to 1957, October 8th, 1957. You going to cross that off, Lily? Sorry about that.
Got
it. It was kind of low hanging fruit. So I figured, what the hell?
Hate you.
A little song recorded at Sun Studio, Memphis, Tennessee, October 8th, 1957. Do you like my oldie-timey radio voice?
No.
All right, I'll stop doing it. It's a song by the man himself, Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire. And although it's not really heavy metal or something, but it's pretty rockin'.
It was on my list.
Yeah. Well, see, and if Lily has it on her list, you know it's got to be noteworthy. But, yeah, the song was actually done by only three people. It was Jerry Lee Lewis on piano, Sidney Stokes on bass, and a session drummer named Larry Lynn.
These sound like fake names, but yes, go on.
What?
Sidney Stokes and Larry Lynn. Sounds like cartoon names.
People were named that
like
back
Sandy
in the 50s.
Like Sandy Berlman. Don't forget.
That was his cousin. His cousin came over, played the drums for him. Thanks, buddy.
Anyway.
But anyway. So now, Lily, I'm going to let you. Do you have more stuff?
You want me to talk?
Yeah, I love it when you talk.
Oh, I'm sure.
I love it, baby. Baby, when you talk, I get all excited.
I hate you.
Go ahead.
The song is filled with sexual innuendo, and Lewis grew up in a religious household and was conflicted over whether or not he should record this. Excuse me, you married your, like, 12-year-old cousin, so shut up. Anyway, the song made the top of the pop.
But R&B. At least I was married. They weren't screwing out of wedlock.
This song made the top five of the pop
and
R&B.
They were cousins.
True.
They were cousins, but they weren't brother and sister cousins.
So it's okay.
And country charts simultaneously with a whole lot of shit can go on and this and the song you're talking about. Both hit number one on the country charts, and while it sold 5 million copies, which was less than its predecessor, it charted higher. It was also featured in what movie? Top Gun. With Goose.
I'm sorry, I'm a little slow tonight.
That's okay.
I'm a little slow.
With Goose and Pete Mitchell, a.k.a. Tom Cruise and Anthony Edwards, singing in the bar To Pick Up a Lady.
Talk to me, Goose.
And the title of the 1989 biopic, Great Balls of Fire, about Lewis, was played by Dennis Quaid. mm-hmm. and took the song
title.
I saw
it in the theater.
Did I did you? Not.
It was super fun.
Yeah.
Did you see it? Yeah, yeah. It's a really fun movie. It's not great. It's just fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's just a fun movie. And Alec Baldwin
yes.
plays Jimmy Swaggart in that.
I haven't seen it, oh, so
my goodness, that's right, because they were cousins,
they
right?
They were cousins.
He did not marry Jimmy Swaggart, however.
He did not marry Jimmy Swaggart.
No, no, because he's a boy.
He couldn't have did Reverend
well,
Jimmy Swaggart.
Right?
Yeah. Ain't that something?
Now, Jimmy got himself in no trouble playing with damn prostitutes in the hotel rooms.
These things happen sometimes, but he sinned, and he said he's sorry.
He said, I sinned.
All I can marry is 12-year-old cousin.
Didn't marry no cousin, but they were cousins, not brother and sister cousins.
Is there anybody listening in the South right now?
Because yeah, we're
like
in so much freaking
like
trouble.
We'd like to take
right?
a moment to apologize and say that we're off our medication. So there's,
West Virginia and below.
Okay, I want to talk about this song. I love this guy, and this was the Beatles' favorite American singer, and Harry Nilsson eventually, him and John Lennon did hook up and did work together, and they worked together on this song. Jump Into the Fire is a song by singer-songwriter Harry Nilsson from the 71 album Nilsson Schmilsson. Was also issued as the album's second single after Without You and peaked at 27 on the American Billboard Hot 100 chart and number 16 in Canada. Written by Nilsson, the song is a hard rock style, is in a hard rock style, is kind of a bit of a departure from a lot of the other things he did. The song was produced by Richard Perry and includes a segment where the bass player Herbie Flowers audibly detunes his instrument. Jump Into the Fire gained further recognition following its inclusion on the soundtrack to a pivotal scene in Martin Scorsese's 1990 gangster thriller, Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
It was featured prominently in a 2015 film, A Bigger Splash, starring Ray Fiennes, in episode 4 of a 2021 BBC Netflix series called The Serpent.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
It's a rock song written and performed in the style of the music journalist Matthew Greenwald likes of the early 70s sound of like kind of the early Rolling Stones 70s sound. He adds lyrically on the surface, it's a hot lover's plea. However, it could easily be taken as a plea to society as a whole, like a lot of Nilsson's greatest songs. It works on many different levels. Steve Thomas Earlywine describes the track as a surging hard rock, while James Parker of The Atlantic calls it livid dragon bones funk. Mm-hmm. Okay. Song recorded in London in 71 for the album Nilsson Schmilsson, as we said. As with much of the material on the album, it marked a departure from his previous work, as Nilsson was keen for commercial success after years of recognition as a quality artist and songwriter. He later commented, "What do you say to a man who writes the puppy song and then writes Jump Into the Fire?" I really needed to, he said, felt like he needed to make a big change, and that's exactly what he was hoping would happen. The sessions were produced by Richard Perry, whom Nilsson acknowledges having been instrumental in his progression. The musicians on the basic track were Nilsson on piano, Chris Spedding on guitar, Herbie Flowers on bass, Jim Gordon on drums. Flowers recalls that Nilsson gave only vague instructions. Lots of tom-toms. A bass riff on in D major. Yelled out stuff like that. Bass part includes a section where, following Gordon's drum solo, Flowers detunes as he plays. Interesting. According to Flowers, he began loosening the bottom string for a laugh, believing that by the point of the song, the performance would be faded out. But it got released on the recording. Overdubs on this master take on the master take included Nilsson's vocals, guitar solos by a guy named John Uribe.
I would say Uribe.
Uribe, and another rhythm guitar part by Klaus Vordermann.
Klaus
received a lot of airplay in the '70s.
Yeah.
Okay. And as we said, it was in Goodfellas.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. Super fun song. He was hanging out with John Lennon at the time. This album, some of the impetus for this album was a time that he spent with John Lennon in Los Angeles. John and Yoko, I don't know if you guys know this or not, they broke up for a small, short period of time.
I think I did read about that one.
And he ran away and hung out with Harry Nilsson. And the vocal on this song is very John Lennon inspired. And if you listen to how the vocals are produced, it's got that slapback echo that John Lennon loved. He is like drowns every record in that. That was like Lennon's like signature sound. So and I had there's a classic albums or Behind the Music or something about this where. I don't know if it was Perry, the producer, or if it was just like a guy running the board or whatever said that he had done the take so many times and was singing so hard there was blood on the microphone.
Yeah. Oh wow. Creepy.
Yeah. He was into there's a great Who is Harry Nilsson and Why Should You Care? That's the name of the documentary.
That's a great documentary.
And if you've never seen it, you should watch it. It's really interesting. But this guy who had this beautiful voice and was an amazing songwriter had a very like self-destructive side. You know, he had some stuff going on. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there we are. Jump Into the Fire by Harry Nilsson. We got any more folks online who would like to be acknowledged?
Talk to us.
We have Cherry Bomb, Cliff Lorenz, and Mark Dubois. Those are our next two that we have watching. We actually have quite a few people watching. These are the people that I'm seeing watching.
You guys are so nice. I like you.
We love you.
I think this topic was very popular.
We love all y'all. We do, because we're like cousins.
Oh,
from
Lord.
West Virginia.
No.
We're very happy.
Oh, boy.
There's a lot of love in this room. There was a lot of love in my family.
Oh, no.
Lots of love. No. Everybody's always loving each other in my family.
Sir.
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 Sir. Sir.
Sir.
Sir. To sir with love.
Oh.
To my cousin with love.
Okay, oh, Lily, somebody take me the hell out of this.
Rooms on Fire, Stevie Nicks.
Oh, yeah.
From her fourth solo studio album, The Other Side of the Mirror, an album I forgot about until now, and I have to go back and get it because I love it. Mm-hmm. The 12-inch single was released in a limited edition poster sleeve in certain territories. Rooms on Fire was successful on both sides of the Atlantic, reaching number 16 on the UK singles chart and on the US Billboard Hot 100. In the accompanying music video for Rooms on Fire, Nicks is seen holding a baby dressed in white played by her goddaughter. It was performed sporadically in Nicks' live concerts up until New Year's Eve of 1999, though it has yet to be played live since then. Nearly 30 years after the original release, Nicks planned to sing Rooms on Fire on the 24-karat gold tour, but the song was cut from the set list. There must be something that I don't know about this song that she doesn't want to perform it anymore, so I'd have to figure that out. In a 1989 interview, Nicks gave some personal insight as to the meaning of Rooms on Fire. It is about a girl who goes through a life like I've gone through, where she finally accepts the idea that there will never be those other things in her life. She will never be married. She will never have children. She will never do those things. It's part of her life. The song, according to the liner notes of Time Space, The Best of Stevie Nicks, was inspired by Nicks' brief relationship with Rupert Hine. So, who knows?
The more you know.
Do you want to know more? So Stevie Nicks never got married, never had children.
Wow, and there it is.
I couldn't cue it up fast enough.
What if Stevie's listening, man? She's going to feel bad.
She apparently snorted coke in her butthole, so let's calm down.
I snorted coke in my butthole.
No,
coke in my butthole.
I ingested it. I guess you can't snort.
Snorted coke in the butthole last night.
Kevin, do you have any more songs?
Yes.
With my cousins.
Yes. No.
I have a good one, too, so you go, Kevin.
All right, I'll go real quick.
Oh, I see which one you're doing there.
Yeah, you see that. You see that, dude? You're taking a look over here.
No,
you?
I don't know what you're doing over here.
Oh, I see what you, Blue's doing. All right, never mind. So we're going to go with the feet.
Oh, Ed Lawrence is now watching as well, so be good.
Okay.
Who's Ed Lawrence?
Nobody that I know. I just
said but we have to be good. She's just
using
Ed,
oh, like,
Ed no. as an excuse. Yeah. Yeah, good try. Good try. So I'm going to stick with the female rockers. We're going to go with Pat Benatar, this one snare snap, and her song, Fire and Ice.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
It's good.
That's a good one.
It doesn't count. It also has ice in it. You're like canceling it out.
Wow.
Go screw yourself over there. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm talking like that. But anyway, Fire and Ice was the lead single off of Pat Benatar's third album, Precious Time. Yes. Released on July 6, 1981.
He's sober.
Oh, yeah, that's too much coffee for you, buddy. Too much caffeine. No more coffee for you. The song was written by Pat Benatar.
It's Pat.
Wow.
That would be hilarious if that turned out it was actually written.
Written by Pat Benatar, Tom Kelly, and Scott Sheets. That's a made-up name, Scott Sheets. Come on.
Well, I mean, my name's a made-up name, let's be for real.
What? Anyway, so it peaked at number 17 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 and peaked at number 2 on the U.S. mainstream rock chart. You know, there's way too many rock charts.
I know.
Oh, my God. The song also won Pat Benatar her second Grammy. Yay! For Best Female Rock Performance in 1982. So there you go, Pat.
Oh, I wasn't probably born yet. No, I was. I was probably a couple months old.
All right.
I want to give a shout out real quick to we did a post today in our
with an overwhelming
in our group, and the group is really growing. We're getting more and more people joining every single day, so we really appreciate that. If you would like to become part of the community, go to LouLombardiMusic.com. You get some freebies, you get access to different contests and things that you can't get anyplace else. Anyways, so I asked, you know, hey, fire songs. Tell me some of your favorites. Smoke on the Water.
Yes.
That's on my list.
Chris Bond.
Michael Golt said Rock of Ages. I'm not sure.
I get where he's getting that. It's in the lyrics.
Start a Fire. Okay. Yeah,
yes. All right.
Fire Woman by The Cult. Fire Down Below by Bob Seger. Child of Fire by Queensryche by Ed Prokopka. Lynn Lingle said Ring of Fire.
That's a good one. I almost had it on my list, but then I put Great Balls of Fire, and then somebody stole it.
Into the Fire by Deep Purple said Mark Davey, and then I added, how about Into the Fire by Dawkins?
Yeah.
So, but really, just to give a quick shout out, Vince Ornato, brother, you were the one who talked about you knew Arthur Brown, so you inspired me today. Fire and Ice by Yngwie Malmsteen.
The Swedish Meatball.
The Swedish Meatball. God of Hell, Fire. No, okay, never mind. That's Bill Van Horn was referencing the Arthur Brown song. Heaven's on Fire by Kiss. Thank you, Chris Bond. Lake of Fire by Meat Puppet / Nirvana. That's the Bill Damiano. John Lane, Burned by the Hellfire Club. Oh, this is...
That's local.
That's all right, dude. Good for you. You promote it. Brother.
Boy.
Beds Are Burning by Midnight Oil. Chris
I almost put that.
I had on my list.
Quest for Fire by Iron Maiden. You mentioned that. By Barb Hilijewski said that. So there's a whole bunch. Jim Vernon, Firehouse by Kiss. Lily talked about that. Light of Fire by the Headpins. I only know one Headpins song. Mm. I don't know that one. Burn by Deep Purple. That's Vince Sornato's favorite band, I believe, is Deep Purple. We got a whole bunch. Thank you, David Kidd, Steve Wiley, Bill Rimmer, Beth Petternell. Take Hold of the Flame by Queensryche. That's our early Queensryche track there. So I just want to give a shout out to all you guys for joining in.
Nice.
And somebody said Fight Fire with Fire.
Yes.
There's a Metallica Fight Fire with Fire.
Yes,
did you guys know that?
I did know.
That's the one that most people will probably be more familiar with. But let's talk about The Doors.
The Doors.
Song written by Doors guitarist Robbie Krieger, who wanted to write about one of the elements, fire, air, earth, and water. He recalled to Uncut, I was living with my parents in Pacific Palisades. I had my amp and SG. I asked Jim, what should I write about? He said, write something universal, which won't disappear in 2 years from now.
In his poetic way.
Something that people can interpret themselves. I said to myself, I'll write about the four elements. I picked fire, as I love the Stones, play with fire. And there you are. So that's how that song came about. At first, the song had more of a folk flavor, but when Jim Morrison wrote the second verse, Love Become a Funeral Pyre. Ranzera came up with a famous organ intro. Densmore also contributed, coming up with some rhythm. This became the Doors' signature song from their first album. On the album, which was released in 67, which is a great year, by the way. It was the year I was born. It runs 650 minutes. No, it runs 6 minutes, 50 seconds. The group's first single, Break On Through, reached 126. Light My Fire was deemed too long for airplay, but radio stations, especially LA, got requests for the song from listeners who heard the album. Their label, Electra Records, decided to release a shorter version so that producer Paul Rothchild could do an edit by chopping out the guitar solos. Boo! He whittled it down to 252. This version was released as a single in April and took off, giving the Doors their first big hit. many fans think that the edit's an abomination. They just tried to get on the radio, and it was just one of those things. This was before Bohemian Rhapsody, guys. Sorry. He said that Morrison disliked the song. He said he hated performing it. He seemed to resent the popularity of the band that the band derived from it. Common thing. We've talked that before about big hit songs by bands that the bands actually hate. Could you imagine, after all these years, having to get up and play Satisfaction every night?
I kind of feel like he probably just, or they all probably just
produced by Paul Rothchild, recorded in late 66, released in April 67. Topped the Hot 100 for 3 weeks in July of 67, sold over a million copies, and was number one hit for their record label, Elektra. So that was the Elektra's biggest hit ever at that time. Ed Sullivan Show, I wanted to get this. Asked the band to change the line. Girl, yes. Couldn't get much higher for their appearance in 67. Morrison said they would, but sang it anyways. Afterwards, he told Sullivan that he was nervous and simply forgot to change the line. Didn't fly. Oops. The Doors were never invited back.
Jim Morrison, nervous, right?
Yeah. Right. It was the first rock song to feature both guitar and keyboard in the instrumental section. Yeah, another thing I want to mention, Jose Feliciano. Yes, Feliz Navidad, not Jose Feliciano. Yeah. Recorded a Latin-tinged version of a song that reached the number 3 in 68 and won a Grammy for Best Contemporary Pop Vocal. It's a great song because it can be interpreted different ways, and Jose's version is totally respectable. It does not have the edginess, correct, and psychedelic vibe that the Doors version does, but it sort of shows what a cool song it is. It can be done in different ways and still get over. In 68, Buick offered the Doors $75,000 to use a song in a commercial. Come on, Buick, light my fire.
No.
That's disgusting.
Oh, boy.
It's just wrong.
Jim would be mad.
Mm-hmm. The Krieger, Densmore, Manzarek agreed to do it.
Really?
Money.
Morrison he pitched a fit. He flipped out on their asses. He was like, "That's not happening." this is the last song Jim Morrison ever performed live. The bass line was inspired by Fats Domino's Blueberry Hill. Nice. The Manzarek told the BBC radio. So there's tons of more information. We could do a whole show apparently on this song.
On this one song. Yeah.
So I'm gonna just leave it at that. It's a great song. There's lots of songs about fire out there. Any kind of quickies before we kind of start to wrap up and get into this day in music?
Nope.
Anybody short ones you want to mention?
No, sir. Not one.
I have Fire by Jimi Hendrix. I don't know why.
Throw it out there.
We're not talking about it. Song written by Jimi Hendrix, recorded by the Jimi Hendrix Experience in early 1967, described as an exercise in soul, psychedelic rock, and polyrhythmic jazz-inspired drumming. One of the most popular songs. This was the first song that he lit his guitar to on fire. Ronnie. So it's kind of prominent in the whole thing. I don't think we really need to talk too much about the song and the history because there isn't much to say about it, but... good song. Should be on the list. Fire. Yay.
And real quick, shout out to Smoke on the Water because it is the song. The lyrics are a true story about a casino catching on fire and Funky Claude pulling the kids out of the way so they wouldn't get injured. It takes place at a Frank Zappa show. It's all the whole story's in there, but this place actually burns down, and it's the story of how this place burnt down, and they ended up at the Grand Hotel to record legendary album Machine Head. So just wanted to kind of put that out to you guys. As we said earlier, rest in peace to the Robbie Steinhardt of Kansas, great band.
Well, shout out to Cinderella's guitarist, who passed away this week. Also,
was it this week?
It was. Okay. Yeah, it was this week.
It was like earlier.
Yeah, yeah. So
in our week cycle or whatever.
Heroes die in motorcades and motel rooms.
Also, we have Dennis Messina, Melanie Lynn Kirkpatrick, Michael Gonzalez, and James Swenson Jr. said, "Hey, Grandma, who's Led Zeppelin? You need to get off the show." He's talking to me, Grandma.
What?
Banned forever.
Here's what I say to that.
Go ahead.
Wrong.
But grandma. Anyway.
I like grandmas.
Okay, well, you're older than me.
Oh, that's not going to work out, is it?
Okay, so right off the bat, Elvis, the Blue Moon Boys made their live debut appearing on the back of a flatbed truck outside a new drugstore for its grand opening in Memphis.
Huh.
The band lineup was Elvis Presley, Scotty Moore, and Bill Black. The name was taken from a song they recorded just 2 weeks previously, Blue Moon of Kentucky.
Yes.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
History.
On this day in 1963, Jan and Dean started a two-week run at number one on the U.S. singles charts with Surf City, written by Beach Boys Brian Wilson, with the Beach Boys on backing vocals. The single peaked at number 26 in the U.K. This guy's got like some crap for kind of being Beach Boy kind of imitators, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. Surf City's a fun song.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. 1968... Jane Asher announced on the national British TV show D-Time that her engagement to Paul McCartney was off.
Oh.
Oh, snap. That's how they broke up, she said on the BBC.
Well, they didn't have text or Twitter.
You're right.
So they had to do it on national TV.
I mean.
I know.
I would.
On this day in 1968, Cream started a four-week run at number one on the U.S. album chart with Wheels of Fire. The double album, which consisted of a studio and live record, reached number three in the United Kingdom. So that shows you how much times have changed.
Yeah, right.
A double mm-hmm. album, one of the albums is live, you know, and it's like the biggest record in the world. It's, you know, it's wow. On this day in 1968, Iron Butterfly's second album, Inagata De Vida, entered the U.S. album chart for the first time. The album contained the 17-minute title track that filled the second side of the LP, which went on to sell over 4 million copies in the U.S. alone. Again, speaking of doing like stuff that would just, uh-huh. you know. The Carpenters show, Make Your Kind of Music, started a six-week run on NBC TV this day in 1971.
Nice.
Remember when everybody had a TV show?
Everybody had a TV show.
It was fun, though.
It was, what are you talking about? It wasn't, you weren't even there.
Well, later on, it still was a thing.
Okay.
Like in the 80s, it was still a thing.
Springsteen's on here, not playing some, starting kicking off the Born to Run tour, started this day in 1975. But For Fire by Bruce Springsteen is another one.
Some people mentioned that.
Sid Vicious, the film based on the life of Sex Pistols bassist Sid Vicious, Sid Nancy, premiered in London, England on this day in 1986.
I don't like that movie.
You ever say it?
Yeah.
Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Holy cow. When I went back and rewatched it, I'm like, oh my God, that's Gary Oldman.
Because he's a fantastic actor.
Yeah.
On this day in 1986, Carlos Santana celebrated his 39th birthday, 20th anniversary of the music business, with a concert in San Francisco. Previous group members were assembled for the event as 17 of them performed together on stage. A lot of people come through the Santana band.
Yeah.
That's my age now.
Yep.
Right.
do you remember this song? This was one of the songs that was inescapable. It was so huge. It was like the radio was playing constantly. EMF went to number one on the U.S. singles charts this day in 1991 with You're Unbelievable. Spent 14 weeks in the charts before reaching
song.
I mean, it was like building and building and building, and it broke number one. It was a freaking huge song. Britney Spears.
Free her.
No.
Free her.
Nah.
Free her.
She needs to be caged.
What?
It's mentally stable.
Come on. Do you know her?
Happy birthday to John Lodge, bass vocal with the guitar, bass and vocals with the English rock band The Moody Blues.
There you go.
Born on this day in 1945. Kim Carnes.
Wow.
And her Betty Davis eyes were born this day in 1945.
45?
Yeah, 1945.
That's
Now I feel like scary. Lily when we talk about stuff in our day.
Happy birthday to Carlos Santana. We mentioned that
there
earlier.
He is, yep.
This day in 1947. JJ French.
I did know that because somebody posted it on Facebook too.
From Twisted Sister, born this day. Also, the founder of TVT Records, which signed some really great bands, including one of my favorite 90s bands that does not get enough love, and that is Seven Dust. Mm. So, shout out to JJ.
Yeah, JJ.
JJ. What's wrong with me?
Stop him.
I need to stop it. Somebody needs to stop me right now. Dig Wayne was born this day in 1962.
Of Wayne Enterprises?
This day in 1964, the amazing and gone too soon singer Chris Cornell was born this day in 1964.
Right. Yes.
Primary singer, songwriter, rhythm guitar for Seattle rock band Soundgarden, lead vocals and songwriter for the group Audioslave. Died suddenly in Detroit on the 17th of May 2017 after performing at a show with Soundgarden.
Which would make this Bennington's death day.
Andrew Levy of the Brand New Heavies was born this day. Stone Gossard. There's all kind of grunt. Look, it's a third 90s person. Stone Gossard, guitarist for Pearl Jam, was born this day. I'm not a big Pearl Jam fan, but I have to say I like the way Stone Gossard and Mike McCready, the way they work together as a dual guitar unit. They aren't just chugging along playing the same thing together. They're like weaving around each other. And Lily, I know you're really excited about this. American rapper, singer, songwriter Pop Smoke.
Oh, I'm just freaking peeing in my pants with excitement over here. You'll have to clean your chair.
Ah!
Pop Smoke.
Wow. Well, that's crazy what you say. You sound kind of crazy, because you're a crazy person.
And that's not just today.
Are you crazy? Hey, you're crazy. You're so crazy. You're crazy.
I don't even know what to think of you right this minute in time.
It's okay.
And I'm the drunk one.
It's just crazy. I'm sorry. That's what
you're not, though.
You digress.
That's probably not very entertaining to the fan.
It's entertaining. I can
sure
see your facial expressions.
Yeah, poor. I feel sorry for you guys. You have to listen to this garbage each week.
I really don't think they care.
People, it could
but
be
you
worse.
Actually,
you could be here in the studio with us.
All right, guys. You guys, everybody have a great week. RockRageRadio.com. Go to wolfscustoms.online. Get custom work done on your musical instrument. Our websites are LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. There's all kind of great stuff. You get access to old videos, bios, all kind of stuff. Fun stuff is there. And please join our community at LouLombardiMusic.com. I'm going to play the song right now that my latest release. You get the story of the song there. And you can get the lyrics and stuff like that, too. So you can check it out there. Pittsburgh Kevin, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, thank you, Lou.
It's been a pressure and a privilege.
Indeed, it has.
Exactly. And Lily V6, what's going on with you? You have what again?
I have my show on Rock Rage Radio, Hot Licks with Lily 6, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. My interview with Thor is this Thursday.
Oh, nice. God of Thunder yes, and rock and roll.
Yes, so listen to that. Also, Saturday at the Subalpine Society is my Lily 6's Live Saturdays. Starts at 7 p.m. with some
And there you have it. Bob's your uncle. This is Peace in the Valley. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini, and we'll catch you all in the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
Yeah.
body shakes like twitches all night. Every word I never heard. I need one thing to make my ears ring with the sound of music so sweet. It's a love sign, not a battle cry, that will make the world I need. Oh, me in your arms, sing to me. We want peace,
peace
in the valley. For peace in the valley we pray. Give us peace,
peace
in the valley.
Peace
in the valley today. We want
love
in the valley.
Yeah.